Ruth? Bull on in Japanese.
I'm Miyuki Okiranta. For a documentarist or documentarian, capturing a remarkable moment in a sea of ordinariness is electric. But lurking in the corners is always the fear of failure, of doing the exact opposite. In the wilds of recording, the machine fails, the tape runs out, or you just forget to turn it on. And all you're left with is your memory and a little self-reproach. So what drives a documentarist to go out and capture the world? Why not experience it firsthand, where that threat of failure isn't even on the table?
Ah, beauty.
Beauty.
Beauty. I take this, the beauty things that I feel with the music, with the nature, with whatever, talk, humans, laughter, and I double up because I want to give, I want to share.
And you are?
I'm Gabi Schaffner.
What do you mean by doubling up?
Well, it is this thing of being doubled up, being split up, being two persons in one. Everybody knows that. The moment you're taking a picture of somebody or a group or something, you're not part of the group anymore. The moment you switch on your recorder in a group of friends just drinking wine and sharing weird jokes, you distance yourself from that. You become the other one. You become the observer. I mean, this is a great art. It's very hard to accomplish this, to be part of something and still sort of be the recordist. And yeah, and it causes a splitting. There's always a moment of control, a moment of decision which interrupts the flow of the moment, except when maybe you just become the recording machine. That could be the other way, but I haven't quite found a solution to the thing. I mean, sometimes I just drop my machine somewhere and I go away, so I leave it on its own and it stays there, the lonely recorder.
Gabi, you've been working in the fields of sound art, composition and poetic documentation since the early 90s. Do you gravitate towards specific documentary subjects?
I like everyday things. Like if there's a woman, maybe, you know, just selling some vegetable on the market and she's got her special way of expressing herself, of, you know, of just calling out the onions or whatever she's selling, you know. And she's got this little sing-song thing when she's calling out them and then she's got a story behind it. And it's tiny things. And people think this, they all take these things for granted. But life's short. And this is also a reason probably why there are documentarists or why there are artists, because they want to preserve something of the beauty of the world or of the pain of the world, the horror of the world, in order that people do not forget about this.
And this, what we're about to hear, is your version of madness?
There are many versions of madness. Probably even I have more versions of madness than this one, but this is one version of madness. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's the madness of the documentarist. Any documentarist must either be mad or go mad while pursuing her work. It's all well and good to embark on a journey, but carrying technical devices for the purpose of documentation is presumptuous and can lead you into the quicksands of self-humiliation. Not that it is a question of falsehood, but isn't documentation, generally speaking, a kind of theft? Isn't it like stealing from time? I ask you, isn't the obsessive pursuit of a particular goal by its very definition bordering on insanity? The object of objectivity. How can such a thing exist? The universe of failure is a starless pit in which vision is lost and the recordist a victim of her vanities. Such a documentarist must turn mad just at the moment he or she realizes that something wonderful is happening and the videotape is at its end, the pencil broken, the aperture wrongly adjusted, or simply the battery is dead. It has happened to many, but few have put it in writing. The failure of the ethnographer right in the middle of things. Compared to the total triumph that results from having captured something absolutely unique, something precious, the authentic copy of a stretch of time, the DNA of reality, a sequence of real time, holy real time, mantra of the field recordists, lost, lost. Technical failure 1. The Beautiful Young Man. 7th of July. Kaustin and Folk Music Festival Kokkola. The minidisc recorder failed for the first time on a Sunday morning on a bus trip into a neighboring village.
Arvoisa yleisö, noin 5 minuutin kuluttua kello 14.30 ohjelmalavalla esiintyy amerikkalainen taikuri Set.
The bus stopped in front of a vestry equipped with a wooden stage and rows of chairs. The backdrop of the stage was adorned with a Finnish landscape painting in sparkling green and blue, cloudlets in the sky and a little brook. We were introduced to the village choir, the music teacher, some little nippers with violins and accordions, and a handful of semi-talented youth. Well, there was an exception. A boy of maybe 16 years who, when you just looked at him, caused something in your heart to tremble. This, as far as I could see, was due to the delicate features and lines around his mouth, which were straight, but still the most mobile part of his face. His accordion playing was without question first class, and he played only two short pieces. Each single tone, each note, appeared as an expression in his face, and only after that they sounded from the instrument. But such an instance happens much too fast to perceive it consciously. I had put the broken machine aside and was totally absorbed by his presence. His face remained while he played, perfectly naked and sensitive, but so deeply immersed as to be unreachable. Deleted number 1. Folk Punk. 9th of July. Kaustin and Folk Music Festival, Kokkola. Every day around noon, a dance orchestra rehearsed on its small wooden platform in front of the main stage of the Kaustin Festival. The weather was rainy and there was less hustle and bustle than usual. Later in the afternoon, Finnish men and women would be circling around in step with the tunes of tango, waltz and polka. The wooden planks under their feet would silently creak and you could just barely hear the shuffling sound of their soles. About 10 meters away, a hardly 18-year-old punk had seated himself with his guitar on a little stone wall, head bent down. In front of him was the empty case. Next to him, his girlfriend, picking at her nails. I placed myself a meter away and switched on the recorder. A dual track unfolded. One part belonged to the rehearsing orchestra, and the other the punk, with his guitar. Not bad at all. He was squeaking Finnish lyrics in a bolshy way and taking the guitar to his and its limits. It would have been better, though, if he had managed to get through more than just 1.5 verses. Even so, I cherished the fact that he had dared to enter into a fiddler and accordion atmosphere, with or without hope of earning himself a beer. The girlfriend tapped her booted foot, but after 10 minutes the boy had played all the pieces he knew and put the guitar aside. I tossed a coin into his case and went away. I was happy with the recording, but only until the moment when I accidentally deleted it. Oh, Deleted number 2. A yoik. 20th July, Inari.
Would you sing a yoik for me?
Don't know. What will you do with the recording?
Mitä sinä teet sillä nauhoituksella?
It's a private recording. It helps me remember things more accurately.
Okay, but I'm not such a good singer of yoiks. My voice is nothing special. There are others, more professional yoik singers.
That's okay.
Tämä on minun oma joiku. This is my own yoik. And it's not very long. And I don't want to have it commercially used
julkisuudessa. Hey, I won't do that. When do you sing it?
I sing when I am traveling alone.
Laulan, kun olen retkellä.
Mostly in winter time. Riding the sleigh together with my son.
Do you sing other songs too on these occasions?
Yes, often. But this yoik is my personal yoik.
Hmm. Did you learn it somehow?
No. When I was a child, I listened to my mother yoiking, but this one is different.
Se vain tuli mieleeni.
It just came to my mind, and since then it is mine.
Her yoik is indeed not very long. A sequence of modulated notes, rising and falling with a little swerve in its melodic pattern. It is like a scent in the air, which you follow for a couple of breaths, only to find out that you have lost it already. Thank you. That was beautiful.
You're welcome.
Tämä on todellakin.
But there are other artists.
Muita, paljon parempia joikaa.
Really?
I know. But I'd rather enjoy collecting from normal people. I don't recall how it happened that I deleted Maya Lena's singing. I had listened to it again the same evening. Yoiking often reminds you of yodeling, but it is different. Rather than quick alterations between falsetto and normal voice which distinguish the yodel, a yoik may even use throat or nasal tones. The pitches slide, and the intervals defy Western musical understanding. By listening to a person yoiking, you can tell where they're from and from what family. A yoik can be the yoik of one person and can be sung altogether differently. It may express joy or love or sorrow. The pattern can be varied, but it still belongs to that individual. A yoik resembles a name. No wonder they are only reluctantly revealed to strangers. I felt infinitely sad when I found the next day that the recording had disappeared from the track list. Instead, the same track number carried the rustling sounds of me walking a forest path. Magic works in many ways. Technical failure number 2. Smoke sauna, 9th July, Pawana, Kokkola. The gloomiest moment of my documentary mission came shortly after I'd acquired a treasure in the form of a gleaming new Sony minidisc recorder from the Kansanmusiki Institute in Kaustinen. I was unable to activate the reload function of the battery. No electricity supply whatsoever was to be found, neither at the sauna nor in its immediate surroundings. I shared this pitch-black room with some girls and two men. The acoustics of the sauna in Pawana are very special. The building is made from wood and stone. The damp air and the architecture of the pool hall next to us, they all combine to form space where the faintest tones retain echo and sound, warmth, color, resonance, and depth. You hear the rubbing of skin onto wood, the crunching of pebbles, the crackling and moaning of the wooden beams, the creaking, opening, and closing of the massive door, the loud hiss of the lulu, followed by languorous moans and sighs. soft murmur and occasional laughter, the swoosh of water buckets being refilled, the sound of water on skin and, nearly inaudibly, on hair, the slippery sound of soap, the splashing of water on pebbles, and in between, the rhythmic, twittering, rustling noise of the leaf dust, bunches of birch leaves on red bodies. Now a soft hum rises like a breeze that seems to move around the room, a humming that gets louder and divides itself into two or three girls' voices. You can hear their voices, but the girls themselves are invisible, their knees, calves and ankles vaguely perceptible. The melody is a simple improvisation with strands that intertwine like long tendrils and which, still in all their simplicity, develop more and more bewildering patterns. Again, the voices rise and fall back into silence. There's a moment of laughter and silence, and another woman starts to hum a new melody. Now the four girls are singing, and I'm almost crying. The two men join in a no less artful manner, and I sit there, painfully tortured by all this beauty entering my ears. A beauty that is fatally and forever beyond retrieval and lost to the world. I was not happy when the singing ended. I was shattered by the awareness of my technical dependency. For days I grumbled and my brain whispered sardonic insults even in my dreams. If I had known what blunders I would further commit with this machine, I would have thrown it into the pool.
Deleted number 5. Eero Peltonen sings the song of the happy squirrel. 13th of July, Hämeenlinna. Again my head is veiled by a dark cloud, quite like a mosquito swarm, and I'm being pestered by the vile derisive hum of failure in my ears. I keep visualizing my fingertips on wrong buttons, technical devices tumbling from tables and rocks, malfunctions of in and outputs, and in between, the gaping black gorge of forgetfulness. Right on cue, Laulu Orvasta, the song of the happy squirrel. Eero had the words translated for me, so I know what it is about. A squirrel sits in its cove high up in a tree and it looks down onto the world. But all it sees is death and murder and other evil things happening on Earth. The squirrel is very frightened, but then it looks another way. Right before its nose, the tree stretches a big branch out into the open air, green and green with rustling leaves. Just like a beautiful big flag, he thinks, and continues watching the swaying branch. By now the whole tree has started to sway, and the squirrel feels warm and comfy. The tree rocks him in his cove like a mother rocks her baby to sleep. All the trees of the forest move with the wind, and the whispering of the leaves make the forest sound like a cantele. Metz and cantele, the harp of the forest. The squirrel looks up into the sky where birds are floating through the blue, singing. And he feels very happy. The song is a famous poem by Alexis Kivi, the first Finnish writer who in 1870 dared to publish a novel in his mother tongue, and not in the official language that was Swedish. Eero says, everybody talks about Kivi's novel, The Seven Brothers, but his songs are just as beautiful. The squirrel song has a rather simple melody. At the end of each verse, Eero's voice comes down to a deep baritone, vibrating on a single tone and then starting anew. The squirrel song ends very low, somewhere in the bass notes. And that was the moment I started to cry. Heart of wax, perhaps. Who could tell? Ruin number 4. Failed interview with a teenager during the Fall Pole Tractor Championship, 15th of July, Kalajoki.
Hey, do you speak English?
No.
I guess you do though.
Only a bit.
I have a question about this tractor race here.
I don't know.
Well, where do all these drivers come from? From Finland?
Yes, Finland.
And who invented these competitions anyway? Are they a Finnish thing?
I don't know.
Well, did the Finns invent the tractor races maybe?
No, I guess the Americans.
Ah, is there a prize to be won?
Oh yes, lots of money.
And the drivers, are they famous somehow? I mean, do the people know them from TV or so?
Could be, yes. I think some of them are famous.
The sun was setting in a storm of red and yellow, the firs were blazing orange. The noise of the crowd and the roar of the engines melted into distant shreds of pop music. I sat in my tent and pressed play. Silence spanned the gap of 1 minute and 20 seconds. Back in my home country, I continued to press buttons, turn volume dials, rewinding and fast-forwarding. I did so for days, and even years afterwards, but the recordings were gone. Reality had failed to double. Its one and only strand dangled faintly luminescent in the past. Whatsoever faint echoes ricocheted in my synapses, I started gathering them. Images of squirrels, faces, houses, conversation scraps, clusters of remembered notes, fragments of smell, touch, and sound. Another parallel world evolved, this one formed by the DNA of words, and I reached for pen and paper.
The Madness of the Documentarist by composer, writer, and poetic documentarist Gabby Schaffner. Recorded the first time in various locations in Finland.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the appropriate ending, isn't it?
Yes.
Where is the line of fiction and reality for you?
I can't find it myself sometimes. It is there. I think humor marks this line. In a way, but humor is always at least double-sided if it is not triple or quadruple folded.
Do you remember the sounds of the recordings that were lost?
It's been quite some time, so all these sounds have probably dissolved with my lifestyle, so they are not there in my brain anymore. So the whole, you know, your past becomes your imagination of the future in a way with this. So it doesn't matter. You've got the words and you've got your own imagination and you've got your own story. So you make it up for yourself. It's not about the real thing. It's about the beauty of the real thing. And that's something everybody can experience. So you imagine these girls singing there, you know, and the sound of the water. And you imagine this beautiful young man, you know, was playing this accordion thing, and use these sounds, words, whatever it is, as a means of transport. It's not about me. It's about, always, it's about the others. Once I've shared it, it's about the other. It's not about me.
This program began as a series of failed recordings, but has since been an installation, has been translated into various languages. So do you think it will transform again?
Yes, I hope it will travel again. Yes, certainly. I mean, the other day I said I wear these pieces, these whatever I do, if it is a composition or like with the Madness of the Documentarist, which is a longer piece, I wear them like clothes. And you know, in some parts, you know, maybe some things fall off, like the arms fall off, but maybe you stick a nice pin somewhere, or you stitch it together with something else. But I wear these pieces like clothes. They're traveling with me, and or you just sometimes you put them in a wardrobe, and they stay there for a couple of years. And if you're very unlucky, moths come and eat the piece. This was 100 euro, you know, and I put it into my wardrobe, and it has moth holes, you know. I was devastated, you know. I bought it.
Berlin-based artist and I'd offer humorist Gabby Schaffner. The Madness of the Documentarist is a collaboration between Gabby and ABC sound engineer Angela Grant. You heard Mimosa Pale on Singing Saw, Teemu Kaskinen on the mouth harp, and the lilting Finnish tones of Nina Lehtonen-Brown and Esa Hirvonen. If you have questions about or for Gabby, head to the Soundproof website to find out what's fact and what's fiction. abc.net.au/rn/soundproof. Or buzz us your worst recording fail at rn_cau.
Soundproof? Soundproof? Soundproof?
Soundproof.